Coming up on Simply Superior.
Simply Superior, news and issues from a superior point of view.
All right, it may not have been purple, but it was definitely haze. What do we need to know about the effects of the smoke from the wildfires?
Excuse me while I kiss the sky.
Then,
I have a podcast called Nobody Listens to Paula Poundstone.
She may say nobody listens to her, but fans at Big Top tomorrow would probably beg to differ.
The Big Top Chautauqua. It's such a fun venue.
And if you're ready to go outside, you'll want to visit the Great Twin Ports get-together. Coming up next.
By sharing the stories and information, you'll enjoy and want to hear. Simply Superior, news and issues from a superior point of view.
I have a podcast called Nobody Listens to Paula Poundstone.
She may say nobody listens to her, but fans at Big Top tomorrow would probably beg to differ.
The Big Top Chautauqua. It's such a fun venue.
And if you're ready to go outside, you'll want to visit the Great Twin Ports get-together.
I am looking forward to something called Bacon and Danny Frank.
But first, it may not have been purple, but it was definitely haze. What do we need to know about the effects of the smoke from the wildfires?
Excuse me while I kiss the sky.
Welcome to Simply Superior. I'm Robin Washington. Later in the show, we'll bring you the weekly roundup of the regional news, as usual, with Brooks Johnson of the Star Tribune and Danielle Kading of WPR News. But you don't have to wait for Danny, because she's joining us right now to give an update about the hazy skies from all those wildfires across the continent. Hi, Danny.
Hi, Robin.
We'll also hear from a couple of atmospheric scientists about the fires. But first, Danny, the sky looks pretty clear right now.
It does, but it's been hard not to notice all of the smoke that's been funneling into our area. And it's been coming into Wisconsin at an unprecedented level due to the wildfires and weather patterns that we've seen. We haven't seen an air quality advisory since August 3rd in Wisconsin. But as many people know, out west, we're seeing more than 100 large fires burning millions of acres. Canada has also witnessed more than 5,400 fires so far this year, far exceeding the nation's 10-year average. And so as these fires are burning and we see northwest winds coming off of the Rockies and Canada, that's carrying smoke down into our region. And it's elevating levels of what's called fine particle pollution. And this pollutant is really important because it can become embedded in the lungs and cause serious health issues. And so it's really been, like I said, an unprecedented level of frequent and persistent smoke that Wisconsin in particular hasn't seen in more than a decade.
And that's true, even though Wisconsin has a significant history of wildfires on its own.
Yeah, Wisconsin is no stranger to wildfires. In fact, Wisconsin is home to the deadliest firestorm in American history when more than 1,200 people died in the Peshtigo Fire 150 years ago this year. And, you know, we also have seen the Garman Road Fire, which burned nearly 7,500 acres back in 2013, one of the largest wildfires in more than three decades.
And what we're experiencing right now is not unrelated to climate change?
Yeah, I mean, climate change is definitely driving the extreme heat and record-breaking drought that set the stage to fuel these wildfires. And right now, what we're seeing, according to the latest UN panel on climate change, is that we're going to continue to see global warming create more frequent and more intense wildfires across the country. And scientists are warning, as we're seeing more frequent and severe wildfires due to climate change, that it's going to worsen air quality as we see longer summers and drier soils. So not good news for the climate change front.
All right, Danny, thank you for that update. And you'll join us later in the show?
Absolutely, Robin.
All right, we'll see you then. So, now let's hear from some of those atmospheric scientists. My colleague J. Carlisle Larson of WPR's Central Time spoke recently with Jeffrey Pierce, a professor of atmospheric science at Colorado State University, and Jonathan Erdman, a senior meteorologist at weather.com. Here's their conversation.
We're joined by Jonathan Erdman, a senior meteorologist at weather.com and a Wisconsin native.
It's a pleasure to be here.
And also joining us is Jeffrey Pierce, associate professor in the Department of Atmospheric Science at Colorado State University. Jeff, welcome to you as well.
Thanks so much for having me.
So, Jeff, let's start with you. Could you tell us a little bit more about the research you do around atmospheric aerosols? It might not be a term that is known to a lot of people, but in short, you're basically a smoke expert. Am I right there?
That's right. So aerosols are particulate matter. These are the particles that float around in the air, and they come from many different sources, from cars and trucks, but they certainly come from wildfires. And that's what Wisconsin has been seeing lately. It impacts what you see. If you're close to a fire, you can smell it, and it has health impacts as well.
And Jeff, looking at the smoke situation we've been seeing here in Wisconsin and across the country, how bad is it really when we're, looking at it?
It's certainly, it's becoming more normal. In these past few years, we've had these large smoke plumes that travel across the U.S. and affect people coast to coast. But, historically, over the past 20 years or so, this doesn't happen every year. The concentrations that Wisconsin was getting of smoke particles and New England even are quite high, to the levels that are certainly would exacerbate health effects for people with asthma or COPD.
That is Jeffrey Pierce right now, associate professor in the Department of Atmospheric Science at Colorado State University. And I want to bring in our other guest right now, Jonathan Erdman, senior meteorologist at weather.com. Now, John, can you tell us a little bit about the factors that are at play with these wildfires right now?
Sure. Well, it all begins actually with the most widespread Western drought that we've seen this century. So I'm looking at a map put out by the Drought Monitor. It's a weekly analysis of drought across the United States. And in the Western United States, it's hard to find any place that isn't in drought. Interesting enough for Dr. Pierce is located in eastern Colorado. That's one of the few areas that isn't technically in drought, but maybe a few areas in western Washington. But the rest of the West is in drought, and in some places it's the top drought level that is analyzed, exceptional drought. So you have the drought. Then we've had a series of searing heat waves in the West, most particularly in late June, the one that produced 120-degree heat in western Canada. And that's led to a very parched ground. And then once you get into the, we get into the early summer months before the moisture gets real deep, and you get these thunderstorms that produce lightning but don't produce a lot of rainfall. And so that's just kind of a perfect storm to ignite wildfires in the West. And once those wildfires are ignited, that smoke is then transported by the upper-level winds, and that's what we've seen right here in the upper Midwest in Wisconsin.
Now, John, you just mentioned that this is one of the most significant droughts that we've seen in years, decades, centuries. Now, the question I have is, we've been having really bad wildfires over the last few years, for sure. We had the Camp Fire, and now we have these other fires that are ranging. As a meteorologist, are we seeing patterns emerge that might make this way more common than it has been in the past?
Well, in a changing climate, the easiest thing to attribute to a changing climate are increases in heat waves and extreme heat. They become more frequent. They become longer lasting. So that's the easiest thing to attribute to climate change. After that, then you step down from that, and then you say it's a little bit trickier, but it's consistent with a changing climate that we should have large swings in precipitation, from droughts to extreme rainfall to droughts. So you put those two ingredients together, and when they coexist, when you have extreme heat and you have drought, it obviously parches the soil, it parches the vegetation, and it can certainly lead to a a recipe for wildfires. Once you have, say, lightning strikes or, if, unfortunately, human-caused events, and you throw in strong winds there, that could also be a factor. So, again, the heat and the drought aspects of that are consistent with changing climate, and those ingredients tend to mix together to lead to wildfire seasons such as we've had recently.
We're talking about wildfires and long-range smoke, what the situation is like now and what it could look like in the years to come. Our guests are Jonathan Erdman, senior meteorologist at weather.com, and Jeffrey Pierce, associate professor in the Department of Atmospheric Science at Colorado State University. Now, John, in all of this smoke, obviously there are fires happening in Canada as well, but how is it able really to get, you know, from the west coast of North America as far east as, you know, Minnesota, Ontario, all of that?
Well, these wildfires in the west, in western Canada and the northwest, you know, pump out this volume of smoke that then gets carried by the upper level winds in the atmosphere. And so, you know, I'm looking at a satellite image right now, and you can see this smoke plume just stretch from Washington, Oregon, and Northern California across, you know, Alberta and Saskatchewan and Manitoba, and then kind of extend eastward through the Dakotas and Minnesota, and then even into parts of the Ohio Valley and Northeast. So it's just transported by the upper level winds. What I found kind of interesting about this is there's actually some fires burning near Lake Manitoba up north of Winnipeg, and those fires are actually also contributing to some of the smoke that's making its way into Wisconsin occasionally and also into parts of the Northeast.
Now, Wisconsin was under an air quality advisory, and they came and went. But, John, could there be any lingering smoke or ash still in the air?
Yeah, that's kind of the tough part about this time of year, is that generally the winds in the upper levels and generally, obviously, the winds in the lower levels are generally weaker in midsummer than they are in other times of year. So, you know, if you don't have rain and thunderstorms to kind of help flush some of that out of the air temporarily, you can get that smoke move right back in. And if the upper level weather pattern is kind of stagnant, it could kind of sit for a while. So this is something we may have to ride out for at least a few more weeks, if not longer.
We are talking to Jeffrey Pierce right now, associate professor in the Department of Atmospheric Science at Colorado State University, and Jonathan Erdman, senior meteorologist at weather.com and a Wisconsin native. We're talking about wildfires and some of the smoke that we've seen in Wisconsin and across the country, really, from these wildfires happening on the western coast of North America. Now, Jonathan, I'm curious, with this in mind, what will you be studying moving forward from what we've seen this summer?
Well, you know, I think first and foremost, we're looking for any signals that this western drought might be battened down a little bit this winter. And just to give you some perspective on that, there are parts of the west, well west of the Continental Divide, that have very distinct wet and dry seasons. You know, they have, especially in California, they spend, you know, 3, 4, 5 months out of the year getting very little precipitation at all. And then they get most of it, say, from late fall into, say, mid to late spring. So if those areas go through yet another dry winter, like parts of California have gone through the last two winters, well, that's not only impactful for the drought and for water supply, but that could mean another spring in summer of completely dried out vegetation that could be a tinderbox for more wildfires. So kind of first things first here, we need to get this western drought, you know, battened down a bit, hopefully this winter, and maybe go from there to having a much less active wildfire season, perhaps in 2022. But unfortunately, there are several months away from California's wet season. And with climate change, California's wet season is now arriving later in the fall than it used to. So unfortunately, we're looking at a pretty challenging wildfire season ahead all the way through the fall in the West.
And Jeff, there have been some pretty massive smoke events in Fort Collins, which I believe is where you are or nearby. What has it been like working in your field in kind of the middle of everything?
That's a great question. Yeah, and yes, I'm in Fort Collins. Last fall was fairly epic because we had smoke from a fire that was as close as about 10 kilometers from us. And in the city, we were fairly safe because the vegetation, the trees stop. But for the people who are sort of in that wildland interface, a lot of them had to be evacuated. And we had very high concentrations of smoke some mornings. And we also were getting long-range transport smoke from California. And we could tell the difference between the two because by the time the smoke arrives from California, it's lost its smell through chemical reactions in the atmosphere. But that local smoke smells like a campfire. It gives us a lot to work with locally, and it gives us a lot of perspective on what we do.
And what have been some of your takeaways from what you have been seeing and even experiencing over the last couple of years and this summer?
One of the interesting findings we've had from some research in comparing when smoke travels a long way and exposes people, such as perhaps when people in Wisconsin are getting smoke from Canada versus when you're near the fire, is there's apparent difference in how aware people are of that they are in smoke and perhaps a difference in how they respond. So if you have a fire nearby and you're aware that there's a fire, we hypothesize that people may be more likely to take protective actions to keep themselves from breathing in the smoke compared to when that smoke arrives. After a day or two of traveling, it doesn't have its smell anymore. People might think it's fog or some other form of haze. And unless they're having really bad symptoms, they might not take protective actions.
We'll have to leave it there. Thank you for joining us today. And Jeff, thank you for joining us today. Jonathan Erdman is a senior meteorologist with weather.com. And Jeffrey Pierce is from Colorado State University. And they both joined us today to talk about the wildfires raging on the West Coast and how the smoke has traveled from the West Coast to other parts of the country.
And that was my Wisconsin Public Radio colleague, J. Carlisle Larson, speaking with, as you heard, atmospheric scientists Jeffrey Pierce and Jonathan Erdman about the wildfires and smoke engulfing the country. Coming up, who listens to Paula Poundstone? After this. Welcome back to Simply Superior. I'm Robin Washington. So now that the air is clearing, although as the scientists warn, we should remain cautious, what are you doing this weekend? Well, there are plenty of outdoor activities. On Sunday, Wade Stadium in Duluth will host the Great Twin Ports Get-Together, and we'll have more on that shortly. But first, tomorrow, Saturday, comedian Paula Poundstone is appearing at the Big Top Chautauqua in Bayfield. She checked in with my WPR colleague Al Ross before making the trip. Here's Al.
She's been on the comedy scene long enough and has been a regular on a popular public radio feature long enough that Paula Poundstone should not need much of an introduction. She's coming to Big Top Chautauqua, and it's been a couple years, so I placed the call, commenting that her California phone ring kind of sounded old school.
Yeah, I have an old-fashioned ring. When my phone rings, I have to wrench it out of Donna Reed's hand.
That is old-fashioned. What was the name of that show? The Donna Reed Show.
The Donna Reed Show. You know what?
What?
I'm going to visit someone this evening that was on the Donna Reed Show. It's a total coincidence to this conversation, but I am Shelley Fabre, great Donna Reed's kid, and I'm going to see Shelley Fabre tonight.
Well, there you go. I just was back to, you know, lying on the living room floor with my head in my hands, looking up at the big TV.
Yeah, I always thought it was window washing that hurt my neck the first time, but it might have been watching TV. You're right, lying on the floor with your head propped in your hands.
And you had to have lights on. Adults thought you were going to go blind if you watched TV.
Oh, if you watched in the dark.
Yeah.
Thank goodness those same adults didn't work in movie theaters.
Yeah. You know, at that point, being a stickler for quality audio, I asked if she was using her cell phone. She said she was. I wondered if a landline might not be more clear, so we hung up and I called her landline.
Leave us a message. We'll give you a call back.
What's up with that, I thought. So I called her cell phone again.
It happened.
I got an answering machine. Some guy.
Okay, try again. We have the ringer off because we record stuff in this room.
All right, okay. I'll call you back. I was beginning to understand life in a call center. But things became smooth.
Huh? Is that better?
Oh, you sound like you're next door.
Oh, I wanted to tell you. I've been looking in through the window for a little while now. Oh, that's not inappropriate.
You are next door.
Yeah, that's a thing.
Well, thank you. It's been a roundabout. I love roundabouts. You like roundabouts?
What's a roundabout?
Driving?
Oh, no, I don't. No.
You don't. I like them. I have been, Paula, on this planet for several decades. I don't mind to admit, on life's western slopes. And all this time, I had no idea that I could have, all along, been calling my life a gallimaufry. Your bio uses that word, gallimaufry.
I didn't realize my bio used gallimaufry.
Yeah.
You know, first of all, hello.
Yes.
Second of all, I have a podcast called Nobody Listens to Paula Poundstone. And in the first portion of the podcast, each episode, I record a vocabulary song. So there's a new vocabulary word each week. But there's only four vocabulary words in the song because as time goes by, they get knocked off the list for the new one. But the one word that I never moved off the list, that I always end the song with, is gallimaufry.
No kidding.
In the writing of my bio, which I'm sure I was consulted, but I don't think I wrote it. But probably the person who wrote it learned the word from the vocabulary song.
I am thankful that I learned it before it was too late. I marvel that you can go through life as long as I have and come across a word that you never heard before. And by the way, for people out there who don't know, it's a confused jumble or medley of things, a gallimaufry.
Look at it. Hodgepodge. Part of the genesis of the vocabulary song was the fact that I can't remember new words when I learn them.
I put them in my phone the moment I see them or read them. I put them in the notes part, thinking that I'm gonna use that tomorrow. Never happened. Yeah.
There was an app for your phone at one point. Mm. I forget what it was called, which is ironic. It was... these games that were supposed to improve your memory. And I did put that app on my phone, and I would forget to use it. And the fact that I can't even remember the name of the company, I rest my case.
Yep. Well, Paula, welcome back to WPR. Last time you appeared on this show was Valentine's Day of 2019.
Ooh.
At that time, we knew what was going on in Washington, but we had no idea what was coming in the year 2020. Tell me about what disarray means for a person whose livelihood is finding humor in things. And if during your career, which is getting to the very impressive range relative to experience, we might add, have we given you easier fodder or tougher fodder over those years to make humor out of?
Oh, probably easier fodder.
Okay.
Certainly more need. You know, when you say that we didn't know in February, Trump knew in February.
That's true.
Didn't know in February, maybe.
Yeah.
I came off the road mid-March at the beginning of the pandemic. Mm. First of all, I don't know what made me conclude this, probably just a rare bout with optimism, but I thought it was just going to be a couple weeks. And then really before a lot of people around me, I started to say, you know, you guys, I don't think I'm going to work again until, you know, after the summer. And people would say to me at that time, they'd go like, so that still would have been just like a few months, right?
Yeah.
And people at that time would go, you're so negative. Why are you so negative? Turned out like I was off by a country mile. But anyways, my initial instinct was to just start making comedy videos because I felt like people need stuff to get through.
Thank you.
You know, they need anything to lift their spirits. So I made all these comedy videos, and then after a while, it was like, uh-oh, I have no income.
Yeah.
Boy, the news that you're not essential is a bitter pill.
Mm. You weren't deemed one of those essential workers?
No, I was not. You know, I tried very early on applying to work at a couple of grocery stores. Because I felt like, well, I'd be around people, and I love people.
Sure.
And it would be a chance. You know, people look so depressed
at the grocery. So I thought, well, first of all, I'm a really hard worker. I like physical labor. Mm-hmm. And so they would be getting their money's worth in terms of an employer. And second of all, it would be a chance to sort of cheer people up a little bit.
You'd be good at that.
I thought that I would be very good at it. Unfortunately, none of the grocery stores that I applied to thought that I would be very good at it. Mm. The one that I grocery shop at. I checked in with the manager. You know, I filled out the application, and I said, spoke with the manager, and I said, oh, you know, I filled out. And she goes, oh, yeah, we saw your application. She goes, oh, I'm so sorry. She said, we just had hired, like, 12 people. And I said, okay, well, that's all right. Thanks. And I said, can I check back another time? She said, yeah, sure. Mm. And so I think I was still in the store. I think I just decided to buy some stuff while I was there. Mm. And I'm pushing my cart down the aisle, and I hear over the PA, do you want to work at the Vons?
Oh.
Yeah. Like, could they not wait till I was out of the store?
Jeez.
At the end of the whole thing, they did say, except for Paula.
Mm, yeah,
so then
okay.
I felt better. I tried to apply at Trader Joe's. Mm. Joe didn't want to trade with me. Wanted nothing to do with me.
Were you picturing yourself as a checkout person?
Yes,
yeah.
But I could. I'm very strong. Mm. I could do any of the work. You know, the only thing I'm not good at is being cold all day. They do keep it awfully cold in there.
True. Yeah.
You know, I would take an anti-whining pill before I went in.
Hey, I have a buddy who I visit periodically out in California. He and I went to the 40th anniversary of the Summer of Love concert, Golden Gate Park, a few years ago. I caught a glimpse of Haight Street as we were leaving the park. You spent some time honing your skills in Haight-Ashbury, not in the 60s, probably late 70s, early 80s, maybe.
Early 80s.
Does that place deserve its colorful reputation? And do you ever get back there? And what should I expect? Because one of these times I am going to walk around there.
I do, and it does.
Okay.
You know, some amount of modern generic stores have made their way to the Haight-Ashbury, unfortunately. And I'm sure there were really great protests trying to keep them out.
Yeah,
but yes, it is a colorful, it has its roots in hippie, and they haven't eschewed that. It's really kind of a cool place. In fact, one of my favorite clubs is not there anymore. It was only a comedy club for 6 years, but there was a place called The Other Cafe that was just a couple of blocks up from Haight Street. And one of the cool things about The Other Cafe was they had a stage in the corner, and one of the walls that flanked the stage was not a wall at all. It was a big, huge window. And so they would roll down a bamboo shade, kind of like now it's showtime. But I would roll the shade back up again to talk to people walking by or to point out the people that were walking by. Sometimes I would ask them to come around to the door and stand and talk to me for a minute. But what was perfect about it was, you know, if it had been on Haight Street, the foot traffic would have been too frequent. You couldn't have gotten a sentence out.
Mm.
But because it was a couple blocks up from Haight Street, the foot traffic was just the perfect pace. And it's part of how I learned to work the way that I work, which is I have jokes, you know, some newer, some older, but I have lots and lots of material. But I don't have a particular order. I don't know which things I'm going to do on which night because I love talking to the audience, and I allow that to be the thing that sort of launches the direction that I go in. And I really learned a lot of that from being there in front of the great crowds in San Francisco.
On the phone with Paula Poundstone. She is coming to Wisconsin a few times in the next few months. You are returning to Big Top Chautauqua in, way up there in Wisconsin. Having been there, are there similar places to Big Top in America, or is it kind of unique?
Yeah, there are. There aren't many, and there's none that, I haven't been to one that feels as out in the middle of nowhere as the Big Top Chautauqua does. You know, during the day in my real life, I always wear a baseball cap, partly just for hair control, which is a big issue in my life.
Mm-hmm.
And I don't know, has it been 3 years? My hat has been the hat that was given to me.
Oh, cool.
At the Big Top Chautauqua on Lake Superior.
That's
and people always ask me, they go, what is that?
Yeah.
And I say, it's such a fun venue, because it really is.
Later on in October, you're in Fish Creek. However, you should know that people in Wisconsin will be delighted if you say Fish Creek.
Oh, thank you for telling me.
Because that's how they say it here. Beautiful Door County. To many people, by the way, it reminds them of, I've heard, New England. Hey, are we in Martha's Vineyard? Man, what a better person to ask about that possible reaction than a person who grew up just west of Boston.
I usually go, you know, from the airport to the hotel. You know, I tell my jokes and then I go from the hotel to the airport. But one time, I had friends from Chicago that vacation in Door County.
Yeah.
They came and we spent a little bit of time together. And it was in the fall, populated with tourists and stuff. It was hard not to buy a pumpkin sweater.
You have one now?
I don't. I do have a pumpkin tie, though.
You're going to be in western Wisconsin, where I'm located, in March at the beautiful Mabel Tainter. Again, I know that you've been there before.
I have been to the Mabel Tainter.
That's the,
you don't forget when you've been to the Mabel Tainter.
No, you don't. No. Glad you're coming back. Thank you. And I noticed in November, I got to bring this up, you are in Ogunquit, Maine.
Love it there.
That's a population of 927 people. That simply proves to me that you belong to the everyman. It doesn't have to be a megalopolis for Paula Poundstone to be satisfied.
No, you know, it's a small place. It's a big tourist place. But I go there usually twice a year. Yep. I mean, obviously it's been different recently. But usually twice a year. I go during the summer when it's very, very touristy populated. And I go in the fall when it's, you know, mostly locals and sort of a ghost town. It's a small venue, so I don't play to, you know, thousands of people or anything. It's a very small venue, but I love the audience there, and I love Jonathan, who owns it. And sometimes in that one place, because I'll do two nights, one of the days, I walk outside. I take a little walk. I can't say how eventful that is for me. Not in this last year, obviously. Mm. I walked outside every day.
I've never been to Maine, and I keep saying lobster and stuff. Yeah.
That's, well, Wisconsin's very beautiful,
sure.
So it's not like you're suffering, but Maine is a hoot.
One final question. I'm wondering about who your tailor is and if you pick out the fabrics.
I do.
Okay.
I do, and I had a friend who's a wardrobe person who does, you know, movies and shows and plays and things, mm-hmm. does the wardrobe. Mm. She helped me with a photo shoot for the cover of a CD I did of a performance in Boston, you know. Not the wildest, most creative idea, but I decided to do like a, you know, me in like a Minuteman costume on the cover of the CD. Get it, Boston? Mm-hmm. And we were doing another one, too. Maybe it was at the same place. I said, you know, I've always wanted to see what a zoot suit, you know, would look like on me.
Yeah.
So I tried on this zoot suit. It was very boxy, very angular. And I'm like, yeah, it's not what I was hoping for. So then she was a wardrobe person. She was like, well, how about if we do this? How about if we do that? And so she and I, designed those suits. Now that we have that one pattern, I just keep choosing new fabric and doing it again.
Ah,
for God's sake.
Good. How cool do I feel that I'm on the phone with Paula Poundstone? Another phone rings and she'd rather talk to me. That
oh,
is
much rather talk to
that's
you.
That's just amazing. I have to say it's always fun to talk to you because that word, fun, describes you. Thank you, as usual, for being with us. You're on Wisconsin Public Radio. That's how people out of state say it, Wisconsin.
How do you say it?
Wisconsin, the second syllable.
I accent the con.
Yeah,
Wisconsin.
Thank you.
Not
thank
in a negative way.
And don't forget crick, fish crick.
Oh, thanks. Yeah, that's the kind of thing that can set a crowd off.
Oh, yeah. Thanks for your time, Paula. Safe travels. Keep in touch. Hope to talk to you again.
Thanks so much. It was nice talking with you.
That was my Wisconsin Public Radio colleague, Al Ross, speaking with Paula Poundstone, who's appearing on Saturday at the Big Top Chautauqua. And if you're looking for even more weekend outdoor fun, and for a good cause, head to Wade Stadium in Duluth for the Great Twin Ports Get-Together. It features food and music and comedians, if you're still looking for laughs after Paula Poundstone. Every business or organization in the Twin Ports is a co-sponsor, or it seems like everyone. And best of all, I should have said this first, it's free. Two of the coordinators join me now, Liz Kramer-Polichek from Temple Israel, who's the logistics director for the event, and John Cole, the new executive director of CHUM, the get-together's main host. Welcome to Simply Superior, Liz and John.
Thank you so much for having me.
Glad to be here.
So starting with you, John, what's the Great Twin Ports get-together, and whose idea was it anyway?
Well, it's a community celebration. We want to exhale after going through the pandemic and just to give folks an opportunity to get outside and to enjoy being together once again and in a fun atmosphere, great for all members of the family. The genesis of the idea came from the folks at Temper Israel, one of our member congregations. And so we are incredibly grateful for them for coming up with the idea and running with it.
Mm-hmm. And full disclosure, I'm glad you reminded me, I am a member of Temple Israel, and so are you, Liz.
Yes, that's correct.
How did you get all the sponsors together?
Well, with some well-meaning, thoughtful members of our Twin Ports community. A number of our Temple members have been longtime business members and community members volunteering with places such as Chum, have been members of Superior and Duluth Rotary, actively engaged in various businesses. They came up with the idea to help also come with our sponsor partner at Chum for this idea, and also an opportunity to bring people together, go to our network, say, hey, what do you think about this Great Twin Ports get together? We're all missing each other. It feels a little easier and a little bit more exciting to be outside on a beautiful summer day in August. How about we do this? And through some brainstorming and thoughts with our friends at Chum and the Duluth Huskies and some of our other organizations that are sponsoring us, we looked at this beautiful public stadium in West Duluth. We're so excited to have that and that community amenity for those of us that live here in the Twin Ports.
Mm-hmm. So what can we expect? By the way, I see you're calling it the Great Twin Ports Get Together. There's something else called the Great Minnesota Get Together. Something. I don't know what it is, right? Why not just go to the State Fair?
Well, fortunately, we can have a lot of fun right here without the travel. We are the Twin Ports. I think about my friends in Duluth, my friends in Superior, and I really think of us as one big community. This is open to the public. It's open to all. That there are other communities immediately around us in Superior and Duluth, and we certainly hope that those folks in those communities feel welcome to be here.
Well, once again, as you pointed out, it is a free event, free admission, on Sunday, August 15th, from noon to 6 p.m. at Wade Stadium. The featured acts include Big Wave Dave and the Ripples, Rockabilly Review, Boyd's Revival and Friends, Bacon and Danny Frank, plus comedian Danny Friedman, Bouncy Houses and Games for the Kids, and food and beer and food trucks, by the way, too. So with all that, what one act are each of you looking for? Liz?
Well, as the logistics coordinator, I have the lucky task of being in charge of trash, recyclables, and keeping our restroom areas clean and safe. And so when you get to do that, you get to roam the entire day. So I'm pretty excited that I am going to have access to be able to see some part of all of the musical presentations, and not only that, but our comedian Danny Friedman kicking off.
And John, what are you looking forward to? You could have more than one act here, by the way.
But being new to the area, I am looking forward to all five bands, and I have never had the privilege of enjoying Danny Friedman, so I am looking forward to some good laughs. But you know, when I see I am looking forward to something called Bacon and Danny Frank. I think bacon always goes well with anything, so that's kind of my thing. I'm very curious about Bacon and Danny Frank.
Okay, well, Danny Frank is also a Temple Israel member, and I hope he knows that he can't bring bacon into the kosher kitchen. Right, Liz?
So I don't know how that became juxtaposed, but hey, it looks like an act.
That's great, and I know that Bacon is going to perform well, as is Danny Frank, and I think all is friendly in the musical world, so everyone can enjoy that interesting juxtaposition, as you suggest.
John, what do we all need to do to keep safe? I know that I was looking at an advertisement for it, and it said, now that the pandemic is over, and of course things weren't quite as over as perhaps when that was first envisioned. So it is outdoors to begin with, but you know, what do we need to do?
Well, you said the biggest thing of all, being outdoors, and that is the absolutely best place that we could all be. But once outdoors together, it's great that we observe some of the protocols that have been advised, that we should wear our masks. And outside of our groups, we should just try and maintain an adequate social distance and pay attention to, you know, the usual sanitizing that we have been doing for a while now. We're out together, we're having fun, but we're being careful as we do so.
Another thing that we are pretty excited about to offer our community is for anybody who may not have had the opportunity to become vaccinated, St. Luke's will be there to host a vaccination clinic at the Wade, at the outside of the Wade Stadium. And we understand that should be from about 12 p.m. to 3 p.m. So if that is something any of our listening audience is in need of because they haven't been able to acquire that vaccine, that St. Luke's will be there for the early part of the event.
Great. Well, once again, it is a free event at Wade Stadium on Sunday, August 15th, from noon to 6 p.m., the Great Twin Ports Get Together. We've been speaking with Eliz Kramer-Palachek and John Cole. Thanks for joining us.
Thank you.
Thank you very much.
Coming up, the regional news and review. Welcome back to Simply Superior. I'm Robin Washington, and I'm joined by Brooks Johnson of the Star Tribune's North Report team. Hello, Brooks.
Hey, Robin.
And I'm rejoined by Wisconsin Public Radio reporter Danielle Gating. Hello again, Danny.
Hi, Robin.
So, Brooks, Duluth has a long-standing group, been around forever, to promote tourism called Visit Duluth. But the city government may be looking elsewhere to get the word out?
Yeah, this week, Mayor Emily Larson announced a plan to go with a Twin Cities marketing firm instead of Visit Duluth to promote Duluth to the region and the world. It's a $1.8 million contract that is paid for with tourism tax dollars. And, you know, for the past 85 years, regardless of the source for the funding, that job has been Visit Duluth and its predecessors. It's a nonprofit visitors bureau that has done this job. And so that has definitely rankled some folks in the community saying, you know, you shouldn't be sending tourism tax dollars out of town. The mayor defends the proposal saying, you know, they went through a public process and this group, Belmont Partners, stood out and can deliver results for Duluth, getting more visitors and more money and really rebooting that pandemic impacted tourism economy. So there could be some work left for Visit Duluth to work on event promotion, and the city council still has to take this up, but a very contentious move to move away from a local firm for tourism marketing, to say the least.
Well, speaking of contention or the potential for contention, St. Louis County Attorney Mark Rubin is retiring, and it's before the end of his term of office. So what does that mean?
Yeah, that means the County Board of Commissioners gets to choose a replacement that will serve until the end of next year. Yeah, St. Louis County Attorney Mark Rubin announced he would retire in September. That's more than a year before the end of his term. He first was elected county attorney in 2010. You know, he was remembered fondly by friends and colleagues. It's worth noting that a couple years ago, he controversially appointed his son, Tony Rubin, to serve as a prosecutor in the county attorney's office. And something that definitely rankled folks, as the Duluth News Tribune reported extensively about that, and found that, you know, other candidates weren't very seriously considered at the time. But Rubin will be 67 this month and is retiring. He said it's the right time and is looking forward to joining his wife in retirement. And so we will see. The controversy will play on. I'm sure we'll learn more about who is lining up to take his spot, at least on an interim basis, before the election is held next year.
All right. Well, Danny, back on the Superior side of the bay, or actually the whole bay and the whole rest of the water that flows into it, you've got some new information on lake levels.
Yeah, you know, as we've seen, water levels have been easing around the Great Lakes after we saw record high levels on Lakes Superior and Lakes Michigan and Huron. And they're expected to remain below record highs that we saw last year and in 2019, according to the latest forecast from the Army Corps of Engineers. But that doesn't mean that they're not still high. In July, we saw water levels on Lake Superior 8 inches below levels in the same month last year, and about a foot below the record high, but it's still about 2 inches above the long-term average. And the same goes with water levels on Lakes Michigan and Huron. They were about 18 inches below the monthly record set in last July. But it's still expected to be far above what we see in a normal year, or an average year, I should say. And that's expected to continue over the next 6 months. But, you know, as we've seen over this past year, there's been very dry conditions up until recently when we got some rain in June and July across the Great Lakes Basin. So that's really driving levels lower. And as we've seen across the country, you know, there's been lots of heat and drought that's affecting the entire nation. And so the Great Lakes are definitely feeling that, and this fluctuations in water levels. And we're also seeing these levels fluctuate typically with the seasons when they reach their peak water levels in late spring and summer. But this year, you know, Lakes Michigan and Huron saw their monthly peak in January, and that's only happened three other times in recorded history dating back to 1918. So we're going to see, you know, levels still remain high, and that could pose some problems as we head into the fall season when we typically see storms. You know, right now we're seeing people along shoreline areas and coastal communities get a temporary reprieve, but as the fall hits, we could see some areas still impacted by, you know, the threat of erosion or flooding if we see some very large storm events.
All right. Well, I'm back on the land. Finally, our never-ending story about the wolf hunt, which sounds like a fairy tale the way I put it, but it's a bit more contentious.
Yeah. This week, the Wisconsin Natural Resources Board took up the wolf harvest quota for this upcoming fall wolf hunt, which will begin on November 6th. And on Wednesday, that board voted 5-2 to set a wolf harvest quota of 300 wolves for this fall's hunt. And that's pretty striking. It goes against the DNR's recommendation to set a harvest level at 130 wolves due to uncertainty over how the population has been responding to the February wolf hunt. And if you remember, state licensed hunters harvested nearly double their 119 wolf quota, killing 218 wolves in less than 72 hours. And a lot of critics have pointed to that hunt as reasons why Wisconsin is incapable of managing the gray wolf population. And it's prompted a lot of pushback from environmental and animal rights groups. The Ojibwe tribes in Wisconsin are asking the U.S. Fish and Wildlife Service to reconsider the wolf's delisting due to what they see as systemic failures of Wisconsin's wolf management. And John Johnson Sr., the Lac des Flambeaux president and also chair of the Voight Intertribal Task Force, spoke at the meeting yesterday and said that he feared that there is going to be a lack of respect for not only public policy, but science and the wolf in the decision that they made. And at times, there was discussion of raising that quota to as much as 500 wolves. Wisconsin's Greenfire, a conservation group of former DNR staff, has pointed out that this quota, if it's reached, would mean that Wisconsin would basically cut their wolf population in half or even more than that in a single year. So it's an interesting time with wolf management and a lot of debate over that. Farmers and hunters want to see more wolves killed because they feel there are too many animals on the landscape, increasing conflicts and harming pets and livestock. And so there's just a lot of debate over the right way to go here. But there seems to be some consensus that the Wisconsin DNR is not able to manage this population the way that they see fit from a biological and scientific perspective because of this policy setting board.
All right. And again, I'm sure we will have an update to your update long before any hunt actually takes place. We've been speaking with Danielle Kading, the Superior Base reporter for WPR News. Thank you, Danny.
Thank you, Robin.
And Brooks Johnson of the Star Tribune's North Report team. Thank you, Brooks.
Thanks, Robin.
You can read the stories by Brooks and the Star Tribune's entire Twin Ports Bureau at www.startribune.com/northreport. And be sure to subscribe to their local newsletter. And that's it for this edition of Simply Superior. I'm Robin Washington. We leave you with the music of Danny Frank appearing on Sunday at the Great Twin Ports Get-Together. Stay safe, everyone.
When you came into my life, baby, well, my heart just skipped a beat, and I needed you more than you could ever know. You made me feel complete, 'cause I was going down, going down. And it's time for me across the water, where I can sit beneath the leaves of smoky gold and hear that high and lonesome call. Well, every day is a new day, just like old Charlie said, which means that we get up and we try and try again. And after all these years, you'd think we'd have